So I guess this is another Snowpocalypse edition of the Hallway Track. JJ, did we do
Ahoy, ahoy.
I guess we didn't do one last year during the Snowpocalypse, did we?
I think we did. Because we talked about how cold it was.
Yeah.
That, but we didn't actually do it during the week that everyone shut down. Right. But the week afterwards, we did talk about it.
There you go.
Did you see all the HEBs were once again bought out of almost all their stock?
Yeah, yeah. So my question is, so last year, all the Beyond Meat was the only stuff in the meat cabinet. Is that still true this round? Because I have not been to HEB yet.
I didn't go. Okay. I didn't even try. I went a few days before and got a few things just to make sure I could get through important, big winter storm weather food groups like ice cream.
Marmalade? No.
Marmalade? You mean Vegemite?
Vegemite, thank you.
Yeah. No, I got, what did I get? I got chicken wings, I got steaks, and I got ice cream. So I'm good to ride out a winter storm. Speaking of ice cream, you're familiar with Milk Bar?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's Dave Chang's Momofuku sort of bakery sweets place. So they actually have a ghost kitchen in Austin, so you can order their cakes delivered. But also their ice creams are now in Whole Foods. And so I had their birthday cake ice cream and it was delicious.
Was it now? I'll have to try it. I was kind of looking at when on my birthday, we actually were at home waiting for the plumber because our hot water heater decided to go out on Friday. Mm. It was great. But I was looking for cakes and that had come up and I was like, oh, I should try this. But then Landon had to run out and he came back with cupcakes. So I was like, okay, I guess I don't have to order anything, but I saw that and so I'll have to go try it. It sounds good.
I do love how all the pictures of Costco and HEB being desolate. And then they have pictures of Randall's and it's completely stocked and nobody's there.
Really?
It's amazing.
Oh, that's a shame. I grew up with Safeway. So,
So for our friends who aren't Austinites listening to this, it's HEB is like the go-to in Texas.
The legend.
Yeah, exactly. That are better than the state government for getting you resources, like when Harvey happened. But then there's a competitor called Randall's, which used to also be called like Tom Thumb, I think at some point. Mm-hmm. And
it's part Simon of the Safeway David. Brand yep. of supermarkets. So like if you live elsewhere in the US and have something that is essentially a Safeway, that's essentially what you have here. It's Randall's here.
Does Safeway have the same weird membership thing that Randall's has? It does.
Yep. Okay. Actually your Safeway membership does work there. I know because my mom has a Safeway membership and we accidentally used hers at Randall's and it worked.
Yeah.
She came by and she's like, I should just try it. She scans it and she's like, oh, ooh, it works.
when we first
moved here.
Speaking of which, I did use my Costco membership at Costco in Japan. So that is also very cross-border.
Oh, interesting.
That's good to know.
It's amazing what's international these days.
If you ever need to buy bulk chips in Japan, literally the only place to do it is Costco. Otherwise, you're buying it in like half-ounce bags.
Today I learned. Okay.
But yes, as Paul said at the beginning, we are in the middle of a snow apocalypse here in Austin, Texas. But
well, it's really just a winter storm that's going to last a day and a half. We hope.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the what is it? Not the calm before the storm, but the pre-storm before the big storm, because you know
that's what happened last year.
Yeah.
You're feeling a little anxious because that's what happened last year. We had a little storm that lasted for a couple days and people got complacent. And then we had the big one that like took out everything.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. And then
it's kind of funny how that happens.
Yeah. And don't forget how it's like, you know, don't go sledding on ice on your car or whatever, because we have very few ICU beds left here in Austin, which, you know, unfortunately... Well, Austinites can't drive in ice, or can't drive in general, but can't drive in ice mainly. So
it's one of those situations. Let's just clarify that you don't really want to go sledding in your car ever.
Good point.
It's not just here and not just now. You never really want to go sledding in your car. for anybody listening who thought that that was a good idea.
Hydroplaning.
There was last year during the snowpocalypse, there was a few trucks that drove past that were towing people on sleds. That was very amusing to watch.
That's just Darwin Awards waiting to happen. That's awful.
It really is. Yeah, it is.
But yeah. I mean, coming from places where it gets icy and snowy and things, like we had a lot of fun trying to explain last year to our family up in upstate New York, like, no, seriously, it got cold for upstate New York and they don't have the things up there to make sure that your infrastructure stays working. Mm-hmm. So like all the pipes are along outside walls with no insulation. So of course they froze.
Yep.
Because you don't do that in upstate. You just don't build that way. So mm-hmm. It was very, very entertaining. So
don't forget also, we have a lot of concrete buildings down here now too. You get closer down to the Rio Grande Valley or RGV, if you're part of the in crowd, they become more and more concrete, and you know, basically it's a freezer, right? That's what a freezer is a concrete building. And people don't do so hot there, which isn't great.
Yeah.
It's fine, just build fires, burn your furniture.
That's right. You know, just burn, you know, carbon monoxide isn't a thing. You can't smell it anyway, right?
It's fine.
Don't worry about it. It's fine.
I mean, you can die of freezing, you can die of carbon monoxide, either way. You know, you might as well die warm.
Yeah, that's true.
Well,
that's
a good point. We won't die of a lack of toilet paper, thankfully.
That is true. That is true. We did not have a run on toilet paper, which is good to know.
Come on, this is 2022. Are we not all rocking bidets at this point?
God, I wish. Nope. God,
I sorry, wish. Dave. We were those people that actually had, we subscribed to a company called Who Gives a Crap? Mm-hmm. They actually, it's, I know this is going to sound ridiculous. It's toilet paper as a service.
What?
It's a subscription service that you get bamboo toilet paper. Somebody turned me onto this a long time ago, and like, I don't know, I thought the ad was really, really funny, and the toilet paper is really good. So we had gotten a shipment for that right before the run on toilet paper. So we were the only people in the neighborhood with toilet paper that lasted us. And Landon was talking about bartering it for other things at some point. Nice. I'm like, what is wrong with you? This is also the same person who came back from Costco once with an entire car full of paper towels. And we had vintage 2014 paper towels that he would pull out, smell like it's a fine wine before opening it, like by 2018. It was hilarious in his mind.
I can see him doing that. Like the Landon and I have met, I can absolutely see him just be like, yes.
That's the smell of the 2014 vintage.
I can see
paper
it.
Towel roll. It. Yeah,
that's amazing.
I was the first like 10 times it was funny. By time number 20, it was getting old. Right. You know.
One day Americans will realize that the bidet is the correct way to go, and the toilet paper lobby won't need to push so hard. Kind of like our taxes, where you know the government knows how much money we make, how much money we make. Why do I have to fill out all this paperwork through a third party? That's a different conversation for a different time, of course.
I take it someone's having to do his taxes right now.
It is nearly that time, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, we do have to wait for everyone to send the W-2, whatever they are, because they always take a bit longer than they should to send those.
Y'all don't just get digital stuff that is ready on January 1st?
No.
Maybe. I mean, for like banks and 401k and whatever, sure, but usually employers are a bit slower, especially if they're, I mean, yeah, last year I had two employers, so VMware's one is probably, like, I probably don't even have access to log into their thing to get it.
Well, that's fair. Yeah, I got mine all digital, so mm-hmm. You know, but
so speaking of the taxes and the weirdness of it all, so 1099 is when you are a contractor, right? Mm-hmm. Where you well, get like,
yeah,
your contract. Okay, so you don't have to pay. So that aside, I got a really weird email, a recruiting email, trying to convince me to turn into a 1099 employee for them as a contractor for them, because I would have to, I could sign off on write off. I could write off expenses and still do the computer work I'm doing. It was really weird. Like,
was that like yesterday or today?
It was today. It was
I think today. I got the same one, and I just hit the report spam and unsubscribe button.
Well, I still read it though, because I was like, this is really weird. Like, what, do companies really have a lack of like contractors now that they're trying to recruit people who have non-contracting jobs into? Like, it's not like a consultant for like Deloitte or something. It's like some random contracting company.
They probably like, are weird, doing
right.
They probably are either doing something under the table, or they're going to pay you way less than you're worth.
Okay.
Like, my guess is it's the way less than you're worth, but make it sound like it's amazing for you. And then people get sucked into that idea of, oh, I'm not appreciated where I am. I'll take this and I'll be able to expense all this stuff and I can be my own boss. Oh yeah, no, that's a standard snake oil to me.
Yeah.
You know, the people who have never been their own boss don't understand how much work that takes.
Mm-hmm.
And so they think, oh, it means that I can take off whenever I want and do whatever I want. It's like, no, it's not. You have way Easter more famine. Work to do when you work for yourself.
Easter yeah. Famine. Well, so they're looking for US citizens with OpenShift experience. And so I'm immediately counted out because I'm not a US citizen. So that experience. Probably means they're doing government contracting, hence the US probably. Citizen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably means that you need to get clearance and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
Clearance, getting top secret clearance. That's a lot of money. The times I've looked into it after becoming naturalizing, like, it on average takes like 60 to 70 grand of the company's money to make you top secret clearance. And then it also takes a significant amount of time to become that person to go through all the FBI background checks. Because they actually talk to, like, it's not like just a normal background check. It's like they talk to your family and like do interviews, and there's a whole thing around it.
A hilarious story about that. So Landon got his clearance at one point, and it wasn't top, but it was, what's the next one down? Secret, technically? I forget. Anyway, I had to get interviewed by the person doing his personnel report. And that was a highly entertaining experience for everyone involved, because I had known Landon about 6 months. Like, they come to interview me and they're like, what was he like as a child? And I'm like, I don't know. What's his family like? I've never met them. You know, like, we had this lovely back and forth, and he's like, so wait, you're moving with this guy across the country. You've never met his family. You don't know any of his friends. It was hilarious. The guy was like trying very hard not to give me like fatherly advice, because he was older than me. Like, you could just tell he had that look on his face of just like, I should say something, but I shouldn't.
That's awesome.
It was great. Anyway, but yeah, it is very involved. They have to know like 10 years or more of your, where you've lived, where you've worked, who you knew. They have to interview all of those people. So it can be extremely expensive, because they have to have people all across the country or beyond, depending on where you've lived. And they're done in regions. So it's not the same person going and traveling. Like, it's like 10 or 20 agents all over the place talking to people. And I don't know, it's a really interesting process. But I don't know exactly how it works. So
You have to get top secret to find out the process for top secret.
Yeah. Need to know.
There you go.
Yeah.
So just to pivot to the food. I successfully did my brioche again.
Nice. And, oh, good.
we did a two braided. I think I threw some pictures somewhere. Hopefully y'all saw it. If you didn't, I might have them somewhere.
I'm looking.
And I now have a brioche recipe that it takes about a total of 18 to 24 hours total from like, I want brioche to me eating brioche. I am confident that I can recreate and reproduce this consistently.
Nice.
And
cool.
We used a cinnamon sugar crust on it, which added a perfect bite to it. And surprisingly, today is Thursday and I made it on Sunday. And one of the loaves are still good. They're not stale. We cut right into it. It was the same kind of perfect flavor to it. So I am very happy with this recipe.
Very cool. So your next challenge then is potato buns.
Okay.
You know, like Martin's potato rolls or King's Hawaiian, that style.
Okay. All right.
Figure that out. We'll be friends forever.
There you go.
Nice. Good to know.
Yeah, I think the trick to them is using a bunch of dough conditioners. And so like the potato starch itself is kind of a dough conditioner. And then usually you'll add one or two other bread conditioners and they just soften them up a ton.
Okay. Paul, have you heard of the 60, 70, 75% dough challenge? Does that mean anything to you?
No.
Okay. So I was watching some YouTube, well, obviously I'm in dough mode, right? And I was looking at their ways to like me to learn how to manipulate dough. And one of these random YouTubers were like, hey, what you should do is get 100 grams of flour and 300 grams of flour split into three, and then make a 60% hydration, 65% or 70% hydration, 75% hydration, and let it sit there for an hour and then come back and then start playing with it to see if you like that level of hydration to for your dough, to see if you can mold it or shape it. And the more I thought about it, I was like, that's actually a really good idea, but I can't find anyone else who's like, first, done this, second, written anything up on it, or is this a normal thing? And this guy was just like an idea kind of thing.
Yeah, so different flours prefer different hydration levels. And generally, the higher the protein content, which means the higher the gluten, the higher the hydration level. And so that's probably an interesting way to figure out like the optimum hydration level for the particular flour you're using. So I can definitely see why that's useful. And also, it's not just the protein level, also the how big the flour is, like the grains or whatever you call it. Like I think like your type OO, which is a crazy fine flour, I think that also gets more, can get more hydrated because it's so fine, and it's also high protein, so it's sort of the double whammy of the two.
Cool.
So I think that's probably where that is coming from. But also in general, like the drier the dough, the easier it is to handle. You know, obviously you can get too dry and then it becomes hard on its own route, right? But you know, the wetter the dough, the better you have to be at kneading and stretching to make it handleable. Otherwise it's just a sticky mess. And you also have to get really good at knowing how to hold and fold and turn it without like sticking it to your hands, because every time you stick it and then pull your hands off and pull bits of dough off, you kind of breaking the surface tension of the dough. And so you want to be able to do that sort of stuff without breaking the surface tension of it. And I've seen there's some bakeries that actually go over 100% hydration. And watching them work on their doughs by hand is pretty amazing.
Well, Laura, do you have a biscuit recipe?
Do I have a biscuit recipe?
Yeah, because I know I've seen your muffins and all. I imagine a biscuit's not too far behind that.
No, because I'm not like I didn't really grow up in the South, so like biscuits really weren't a thing. I've got scones, stuff like that. I'm just trying to think, like most of the recipes I've done for bread and things like that are handmade are pretty standard. I mean, I've made sourdoughs before. I've made various kinds of bread before. I can't even remember anymore, but I don't make them now because it's a lot more work than I really feel like doing half the time. But no, most of my stuff is very much the scone recipes, the muffin recipes, mm-hmm, absolutely, you know, stuff along that line. Pancakes are really easy to make from scratch.
Pancakes are like one of those things that like you, no matter what you have in your oven, your pantry, you can make a pancake. Like as long as you have flour, you can make a pancake. And that's so wonderful to know.
Yeah. There's a lot you can do like to change, like tweak the flavors and do different things and change the batter and blah, blah, blah. But
M&M's, yeah, it's, put M&M's in it.
Yeah, M&M's.
So pancakes are super easy to make, but also some of the pancake mixes are delicious. I don't know if you've all seen, but you can buy the Whataburger pancake mix.
You can
just add water to it and you get like really delicious pancakes, which if you're super lazy is nice. But also if you instead add like an egg and some like low fat milk instead of the water, it gets even better again. So I'm all for making your own pancakes, but I'm also for like getting the mixes and doing it that way as well.
Yeah. Like I don't want to say that whenever I make pancakes that I use, like I do it from scratch every time. No, absolutely not. I use a mix every single time. Actually, my favorite right now is Kirby Lane's pancake mixes. Yeah. They're solid. So good. But also we did a lot of Hogden Mill. Buckwheat pancakes are actually really good mixes. If you can find some buckwheat pancake mixes, those are really delicious. But believe it or not, probably the most interesting thing that I've added to a mix that wasn't expected to come out really well, but it came out amazing, is if you get a cornbread mix, so just a standard like honey, like cornbread mix. We did a honey cornbread mix from Central Market. Mm-hmm. We put oat milk in it. And I didn't think it was going to come out well, but oh boy, was it creamy and absolutely delicious as cornbread.
Sounds like some hippie shit over here. That's some hippie shit.
Well, my cousin is lactose intolerant.
Okay.
And so we were like, what could we do? Because we were told is just, we can't do any dairy. They didn't tell us why. So I didn't know that like baking it would be okay. And so we were like, oh no, we got to find something that doesn't have gluten and doesn't have dairy. So we found cornbread and then I found oat milk and I'm like, well, worst comes to worst, this tastes awful.
It's true. That's good.
But
that's
it was good. Delicious. So we're going to do it all again. Right. It actually tastes better to me than if you're putting in regular milk into a cornbread mix. The ones that call for milk.
Okay.
All right. It was very good.
JJ, are you looking for a biscuit recipe?
So as I get more and more skilled in this space, I feel like I need to have a fallback biscuit recipe so I can start making, like I've seen some tweets and some pictures of people doing biscuits, just be like, this is my grandma's brisket recipe or whatever. And like, I didn't have that. And I'm like, I know I should be able to make these things. And we've tried a couple recipes at home, but they haven't really done exactly what I wanted.
Yeah. And I mean, I think just about everyone's grandma's biscuit recipe is the white wings, self-raising flours, and fat. And I think there's a little bit of water or milk in there too. So it's pretty straightforward. It's pretty simple. The main thing is you don't want to overwork it. Otherwise, it, like the get too much gluten and it forms a brick instead of getting all nice and fluffy.
Okay.
Actually, Jess Pryles has a pretty good recipe on her website that really puff up and get really tall. So I would look at that. And I've made her recipe, but switching out the butter for tallow. You know, that big box of Wagyu tallow I got. And that those are pretty delicious. But in general, I don't really like biscuits because they're just so damn dry. And the way you solve that is by pouring cream gravy over it. And then I'm also not a fan of cream gravy. So yeah, kind of just...
So
every once in a while, it's kind of nice and trashy to do like a sausage cream gravy and biscuits. But most of the time, it's just not my thing.
So here's a better way to do that, like deal with the dryness, is you actually use it as a crust instead of a standard crust for a chicken pot pie.
Yes.
Ooh, it's delicious. Clever. I've done that before. Like I've made biscuits. I just don't have like a recipe to give you. But like that kind of thing. That kind of thing actually makes a really lovely casserole. So like you're not really making a pot pie. You're making the internals of a pot pie with a topping on top. Or like some people will do it with shepherd's pie. If they don't want to do potatoes, they'll do a biscuit topping and put that out into like a freezer meal and then put that into the oven and it bakes really nicely. And the biscuits get nice and golden and it's very tasty. So nice. I'm a big fan of that kind of like messing with biscuits to make them like do different things. Also, like when I was growing up, biscuits are something you cut up and you put butter on for breakfast. Like,
yeah,
I didn't grow up with the like biscuits and gravy grits world that is very prevalent. Like when we go to Memphis, it's very prevalent there and that's a thing. And yeah. I've learned to enjoy it, but it's not what I'm familiar with making, I guess.
Well, my goal is to make some briskets from scratch. Biscuits?
Make some brisket from scratch. Yes, please.
There you go. so Texan of me. some biscuits from scratch to match with the bacon and eggs that we have on, you know, Saturday or Sunday mornings. So we can have like the carb with the meat, and then instead of like getting the canned version of it, right? Like that's, we throw the butter on and or jelly or whatever.
So here's something different to try that.
What's that?
I think you might find interesting that is carb based. I don't know what the official name is, but the recipe that I originally had found this under called the Unda style quesadillas. Is that a real term? I have no idea, but I make them in the mornings and they are a wonderful breakfast. Mm. So you take an egg, crack it into something, put in toppings. We typically do bacon and spinach. Rip up the baby spinach into like bite-sized pieces, cut up the bacon into little bite-sized pieces and blend it all together with the egg and a little bit of milk, some salt and pepper. Blend that all together. Take a small frying pan or like somehow make a smallish size, about the size of a taco shell, like a tortilla, taco sized tortilla. Pour the egg mixture into there. And then as the egg is starting to solidify, put the tortilla right on top of the egg as it's still a little moist, let it cook. Then once that's kind of started to solidify and brown up a little bit, get your spatula under it, flip it over, put a little bit of cheese on the inside, and then flip over the side to make a quesadilla, and then heat it on both sides. And you have a amazing tasting scrambled eggs and bacon and whatever else you want to put in it with the carb. That's the tortilla shell, and you can eat it like a quesadilla.
So it's basically delicious.
It's very fast.
Basically like a breakfast taco in quesadilla form.
Yeah basically. Yeah. I don't know where the Unda style thing came from. I don't know where any of that came from, but more think of it like an omelet.
You said Unda, Unda style?
Unda, UNDA.
Oh, okay.
I've never looked it up.
I thought you said Unda style. And I was assuming it was Unda because the egg was under the.
Oh, question maybe. For clarification. I don't know. Hold on.
Question for clarification.
Just is one. This, make it good.
Is the tortilla already cooked? Or is it a raw tortilla?
It's already cooked.
I guess so.
Most places, JJ, don't have access to raw tortillas like we do at HEB. So you can almost always assume it's a...
I make my own, thank you very much.
Sure.
I literally just ordered tortillas from the store. How about that? You know, from HEB. They're HEB tortillas. Are they raw?
Nora, I need
so you
Nora,
can get.
I need to teach you how to make your own. Nora has taught me, and I need to make. I need to teach you because well, you'll never.
There's
need
two stages to Texas tortillas. Three stages. One is you buy the store bought ones. The second is you buy the raw ones from HEB, and then the third one is you make your own. So what in
if,
the
how about a
the,
fourth one, and I just get you to make me tortillas with your little like press thing, just because it's that, fun to listen to the noise too. It's making.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'll have. But, how about this? I'll have to have you both over, and we will do, like we do, all kinds of tacos and things like that, and I make Mexican street corn. So we could do like, I could have y'all over. You could bring me tortillas and we will make a taco spread that y'all can fill. And then I will have my deconstructed Mexican street corn.
Okay. Perfect.
Perfect. Okay. We will do that. Speaking of food stuff, I finally went to the dark side and I have an air fryer.
Oh, no.
But
okay,
it's not really an air fryer. It's a convection toaster oven.
Yeah.
But like it does Ninja. Basically the same thing.
Okay.
No, it's like the Ninja you have, JJ, but it's the Cuisine Art, and it's actually like a full size toaster oven, so you could cook an entire chicken or whatever in it. But it's got the turbo convection, and you can get the mesh tray thing that you would get in a air fryer, and so you get basically the same effect. It is a little bit further from the heat source, so you do generally add a couple of minutes when you're doing a regular air fryer recipe, but otherwise it turns out just as good. And you end up generally with more space. And and it's also versatile because you can also use it as a convection oven. You can cook a pizza in it, you can cook a whole chicken in it. But what I did was, if you all ever go to Trader Joe's, one of the things they have in the meat section is, you live right near Trader Joe's.
I refuse to go there.
Why?
Great.
Actually, no, that's a lie. I go there if I need to buy some kava for an emergency. But every time in there, I don't know. I just don't like. It's. I feel weird when I walk in there. Like it's.
So the first thing you have to understand about Trader Joe's is it's not a grocery store.
That's so probably why I feel
it's
weird.
It's not HEB, right? Yeah. And so you're not confused. Doing your grocery shopping there, for the most part. Like if you're after just like vegetables and stuff like that, okay, sure, you can probably get away with it, but it's not like a fully stocked grocery store. But they have a lot of in-house brand stuff that is really, really good. They have a lot of crap as well, but you kind of got to sort through it and find the good stuff. But one of the things they have in the meat section is they have a pre-spatchcocked chicken that's got like a lemon, rosemary marinade on it. And so you just get that, stick it in the air fryer, put it in for like 25 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever, you pull it out and you have like this perfectly super crispy skin cooked chicken ready to go. And they're also pretty small. And so even in some of the smaller air fryer, like the weird like stand ups with the drawer, they usually will still fit in. If you fancy, you can like throw a bunch of like baby potatoes and garlic under it, and so they'll sort of catch the juices and cook as well.
Holy hell, I might actually be doing this because that sounds spot on to what my family will eat, and it's literally down the street from me.
It is down the street from me.
Yeah.
Actually, the other thing, JJ, that you'll like is they just like a few days ago, started stocking a sauce that's a facsimile of the Chick-fil-A sauce that you like.
I don't like Chick-fil-A sauce.
You always have you have bottles of it in your fridge.
No.
Yeah.
Oh my girl, you're talking about the what is it, the Polynesian? My girls have that. Yeah, they.
Oh, okay. Well, it's in your house.
Sure. Yeah, it's a currency in my household.
Right. Well, they have a facsimile of that they just came out.
Yeah. No, I'm
interesting.
Condiments and I have never really mixed. No pun intended. Yeah. Come on, Laura. You know you liked it.
So I did chicken wings in the air fryer last night, or the convection oven, and they turned out really, really good.
How'd you deal with the smoke?
hot smoke.
Oh, every time I've tried to do chicken wings, like drumsticks or whatever inside my air fryer, I get ridiculous smoke coming out of it to the point where it's almost annoying.
I mean, there's like a little bit of smoke, but that's just like because stuff's cooking.
Yeah, we don't get much out of our air fryer. Like, what are you putting on it?
I made like a garlic parmesan sauce once. Like, I didn't do anything too crazy.
So I mean, I could see if it's like really hot and it's really close to the heating element, maybe, but it shouldn't like be super smoky. Again, like it, like, you know, no more smoky than cooking something in a pan would be. In fact, less smoky than that, even.
Yeah. Mm.
Like way less smoky than, say, cooking a steak and setting your house on fire.
Hey, speaking of, I have a follow-up to that.
Oh no.
After that situation, I finally decided to use my flamethrower or my little like torchy dude from H Mart as my way of doing it outside. No, it came out perfectly. Yeah. Like I just need to practice it a little bit more and get a little bit more confident with it. But I was like, I only had to do one side of the steak too. I didn't have to flip it because I'm only going to cut it one way anyway. So I was able to just like go over.
Hang on. You're not doing it for looks. You're doing it for flavor. If you're only searing one side of it, you're missing out on flavor.
Am I?
Yeah, of course. The whole point, the fat strip. Yeah, no, the whole point of doing the searing is to generate flavor.
Oh.
And so if you're only doing half of it, you're missing out on half the flavor.
Okay, so what I did is I did the fat strip on the fat cap from the New York strip, and then I did it on top of it to get it nice and like nice and browned and nice. Well, not to the point where I wish I could have it, but that's just because it was the first time I had done it. But I didn't flip it because I figured, you know, why? But good to know.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. The whole Maillard reaction thing, the main reason you do that is for the flavor. Because it's basically, I mean, it's not caramelizing, but it's basically, you know, doing something that's similar to caramelizing.
Got it. Okay. Well, I have multiple steaks because of the snowpocalypse, and I will be doing it again soon.
Yeah. Well, let us know how it goes. I went to the dentist for the first time in like 2.5 years.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, that was fun. I showed up. Well, so actually, it is an amusing story. So the dentist called me and said, hey, you haven't been in for a long time. And I'm like, yeah, fair. All right, I'll make an appointment. And so I show up for my appointment and they go, you don't have an appointment. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, here's the text. And they're like, that's not us. And I'm like, what? And she's like, but we've got a opening in 30 minutes. So just like wait in your car and come back. I'm like, okay, cool. So while I'm waiting in my car, I look it up and it's actually the old dentist I saw like 6 years ago, I guess is desperate for people to come in and calling around super old patients. And it didn't even click because it's in the same area. It's Great Hills. So they said Great Hills something something dentist. So I assumed it's the dentist I go to.
Yeah.
And so I go in and they're like, oh boy, you're going to need a proper cleaning. And so I had to go in and get like the deep cleaning with that sonic machine that goes like under the gums.
Mm.
I don't know if you ever had that before, but it's basically the periodontal cleaning.
Okay.
And they basically do it in two sessions. They do your left half and then your right half. And they numb you first because it's pretty unpleasant. And so I got super clean teeth. But then I also had them fix, I've had a chip in one of my front teeth as long as I remember. And I was like, you know, if I'm already getting numbed up and stuff, you might as well fix that. And so I've got a new front tooth. Well, just the corner of it there is no longer chipped.
Hmm. Huh. So, You're acting like you never get your teeth numb. So I'm guessing you rarely get fillings.
Oh, I've had one filling in my adult life.
What?
I've had none.
So here's the crazy thing.
I've never had a cavity.
What the hell is wrong with you people? Like, I have nearly every tooth filled.
What do you mean?
I've got one root canal, two crowns.
Yeah, no.
Laura, have you tried brushing your teeth?
Yeah, exactly.
I have. Thank you.
You're welcome.
No, so when I was younger, like, it used to drive me crazy because my brother would have nothing, no fillings, and he would like drink the sugariest drinks and everything. and I always had fillings. And what my dentist told me was that sometimes you just get the wrong end of the DNA and, you know, your teeth are just softer or whatever it was. And he's like, I forget what it was now. He's like, you're just going to have a lot of it because your mom does too. And I'm like, oh, okay, fine. But that still pisses me off.
So I have the kind of other end of that problem where my teeth have always been really good, but my gums, not so much. And so I develop plaque and tartar or whatever it's called, like overnight. And so it doesn't matter how often I floss, how often I use like a water pick, how often I do any of that sort of stuff. Like between like 6 months between like dental cleaning, I have, you know, plaque and tartar and stuff that need to like chisel out of my teeth. But
yeah,
that's fine because I also don't get cavities. So whatever.
You suck. You all suck.
And the beginning of January, I did my little normal 6 month thing at the dentist, and it was a new dentist. And at the same place I went, because
wait, it was a nude dentist? Is that like
it was a new, it was great. It was wonderful.
I've been to a topless hairdresser. I've never been to a nude dentist.
Wait, what?
No, not really. Laura, it's called A Little Off the Top.
Hey.
Oh, God. Hey. You know, like, I thought this was going to be the start of another thing where you're like, yeah, I do pop-ups everywhere. And you're like, wait, you did what? So, okay. Anyway.
I'm sure they exist, though.
They do.
Yeah. Well, we used to have one here in Austin that was very prevalent. Yeah.
A topless
hairdresser.
No.
It was called Sexy Scissors. It was over by Airport and 183. The only reason why I know about it, because there was a computer repair store right next door to it.
I'm sure that's the only reason you know about it, right, JJ? Okay.
I tried to get a job there at one point. And I was
the topless hairdressers.
Of course. Why wouldn't I?
I'm sure they were an equal opportunity employer.
Hey, somebody's got to run the books, man. Just saying.
I hear the benefits are great.
There you go.
God.
Wow, we went there. All right.
Just started going and it was just like, all right.
Oh, anyway, JJ, you went to a new dentist. What happened?
Well, I was going to say.
Did they drill your mouth?
No, funny. No.
Oh.
But in all seriousness, the new dentist, she was like, she looked at me and then she looked at x-rays and then looked back at me and then said, hey, all right, lean back, open your mouth. I did. And she was like, poked around and she's like, all right, get up. And I'm like, what? She's like, you're the most boring patient I've had in 6 weeks. And I was like, is that good? And she was like, well, you know, you're fine. I'm like, oh, okay, thanks. And that was it. It was great. So
for those along following at home, Laura literally fell off her chair laughing.
Yep. She's completely gone on mute. She's just giggling.
No, I'm not on mute. I'm still here. But no, y'all just started me down this path and everything you're trying to explain to JJ is just going the wrong way.
Yep. well, on that note.
So now that we know that JJ has excellent oral hygiene.
Hey, he's a diabetic. That's a big deal, man. Just saying. Something to be proud of. Anyway, all right. Well, all right.
Say bye.
Yeah, so bye. Everybody say bye.
Bye.
Bye.